Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. Published by Self-Realization Fellowship. Copyright 1946 by Paramahansa Yogananda. Recorded on 14 cassettes for the Library of Congress in the studios of the American Printing House for the Blind, 1972. For special distribution as authorized by Act of Congress under Public Law 89-522 and with permission.
And what you are listening to is my introduction to The Autobiography of a Yogi, which is, if you will, the prequel to the book and its author that we're going to be talking with today. I'm Richard Dugan. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and I thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be an extraordinary afternoon for me, especially because it's raised, as I've shared with our guest, 33 years of introspection as far as the beginnings of my, what I like to call my official search period. It was very funny as I began working for 15 years in a religious radio station, and I would say that, and they say, well, once you've found what you need to find, your search is over. And I found that my search is never over because we're always learning and growing and experiencing, and new things are coming into our lives, such as the book that we're going to be talking about. It's called The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda. And I would like to welcome to our microphones Swami Kriyananda, who is the author of this work. It's required reading for every spiritual seeker. That is according to Michael Tomes, founder of New Dimensions Media. It's an extraordinary work, and I want to thank you, Swami Kriyananda, for joining us here on the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I want to say that I completely concur with what you just said. The search is never over. As Yogananda said one time in my hearing, the evolution never ends. You go on until you achieve endlessness.
Mm. I just happened to be listening to the audio tapes that I've been able to hold on to and recopy, if you will, so that I still have them in good condition over the last week to 10 days since I knew that I was going to be interviewing you. And I came across some extraordinary stories that I certainly remembered, but these were brought back to my remembrance, especially that moment of omnipresence that he, Paramahansa, experienced at the hand of his guru, a slight tapping on the chest, and he saw, and it didn't hear anything, but he saw in front and back and all around him, 360 degrees. I can't even imagine what that must have been like, just extraordinary experience.
It's not that it was without sound. Because he said, Om blows wondrously on her vapors. Om is the cosmic sound, which is the vibration that creates the whole universe. So that was the sound he was hearing.
Mm. Now, you, in your writing of this book, The New Path, you spent the last 3.5 years of his life with him. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And we want
to... They're the most wonderful years of my life.
Absolutely. Well, I want to share that with our listeners as well. I want to start at the beginning for you, and let's touch upon that as far as when your search began.
Well, you know, in a sense, it's been all my life, but it began more consciously when I turned 13, and I was ready to seek truth, but I could not equate that truth with God, because the God that I'd been told about in church just did not appeal to me. He was judgmental. He was had no sense of humor. There was no bliss or joy in it. And so I was trying to find something that would help all people, that would help them to find joy and inspiration. So I first turned to astronomy, just because of the vastness of the universe and how beautiful it is. But I soon realized that that is not the way to do it, because I could only know those things intellectually. So then I turned to maybe ways of helping people through through politics, and I realized that no system is going to change people. People define the systems. The systems can't define people. Gradually, I turned around to the arts, and I thought maybe through music or something, and in my life, I've written over 400 pieces of music. But gradually, I remember coming around to the point where I realized that every single way that you could possibly seek the kind of inspiration and so on that I was seeking had to end in the word or the concept God. And I remember going out one night, taking a long walk, and asking myself, if there's a God, what must he be? And I realized, first of all, well, what makes me ask this question? The fact that I'm conscious. Therefore, he has to be consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the more aware I am, for example, if I am very clear-minded, the more close I am to that consciousness. And so I gradually evolved to the point in my thinking that long walk that then the goal of life simply has to be the search for God. I didn't know that there were such people in the world as saints. I'd never heard of the concept. And I felt maybe I was going crazy, but I thought there's just nothing else I can do. And I decided I would give my life to him. And I knew nothing about Indian philosophy. You know, when you lift one hand to God, he drops two to pick you up. You probably heard that saying. And I really decided desperately I had to find God. And my parents, God arranged it that my parents would not be around. I was only 22, 21 at the time when I began this serious thing. And my father was sent, uselessly as it turned out, to Egypt to explore for oil. He actually found where oil would be found, and Mobile came in and discovered oil there. But Esso, he was working for Esso, and they pulled him back just not long after I had gone through this great change in my life. And I put my mother on the ship to go join him. The very day that I put her on the ship, I discovered Autobiography of a Yogi. It absolutely transformed my life. I, from the day after finishing that book, I took the next bus to California and went to Yogananda, and the first words I said to him were, "I want to be your disciple." That was nearly 63 years ago, and I'm still, this is dedicated or more so than ever. But he answered everything. But the thing to me that was the most beautiful about his book was the perfection of his reaction to every circumstance. Hmm.
I thought it was extraordinary as I was revisiting some of the content of Autobiography that it was an extraordinary adventure that I sort of envied it at certain times. I think of the story he tells of the kites and how he told his sister that one of the kites had gotten away. Well, he told her that he was going to get it back, and he did. But it was one of the most unusual, and I think it was even described as even, I think a word miraculous was used in that context, because it didn't seem possible.
But the beautiful thing is that God will and does answer our most trivial requests. It's amazing, because you think of miracles are big things, like bringing somebody back to life. Mm-hmm. But if you live for God, you will find that even the littlest things, he's there consciously helping you out. It's just amazing, and it's thrilling.
Hmm. The book is entitled The New Path, and it is available at your local bookstore at Amazon.com. You can also go to ananda.org. If I am correct in that title, ananda.org. It is also going to be available here locally in Santa Barbara at Paradise Found. That is on East Annapamoo Street, just about a half a block east of State Street. So if you're looking for this book, it will be there shortly. They have placed an order, and they should be arriving shortly. Again, the book is called The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda. And my guest is Swami Kriyananda. Now, you were given this name through the course of your training, teachings and so forth. Tell me, what does Kriyananda mean?
Kriyananda.
Beg your pardon.
It means two things. One, joy in action, and the other is joy through action or through service. And the third meaning, with what I really meant, was through the practice of Kriya Yoga, which is the technique that Yogananda brought to the West. But it has turned out that my life has certainly been having to seek this through action, because I've had to, my guru told me that your life is one of intense activity and meditation. It certainly has proved to be that.
Well, I'm intrigued by the fact that this book now exists, telling us from your perspective about Paramahansa. What was it that led you to write this work? Because this is it was only 3.5 years, but a lot can happen in a very short time.
Oh, a lot, I'll tell you. Also, I spent a great deal of time with him privately, and he was teaching me to be a teacher. Let me tell you an amusing story. I had been with him less than 8 months, less than a year, and I knew that he had been not going to the San Diego church for some weeks, and people down there were told to look in the newspaper to see when he would be lecturing. And so I saw that he was to lecture the next Sunday, and I was very pleased for their sake. When Saturday morning somebody came to me and said that he would not be lecturing, he wanted me to lecture. Well, I was 22 years old, and I'd never lectured in public before, and here I had to face all those poor, disappointed people and give them a Sunday service. But it was really sort of like a bird being thrown out of the nest. He threw me to the wolves, you might say. But it was a great experience because, first of all, there was no possibility of being nervous. I was just too sorry for those poor people. But from then on, he had me teaching in public, and he had me being a minister. And he told me, write down the things that I say. And I've written many things down. I've written The Path, which talks about many stories. Another one is Conversations with Yogananda. Another one is The Essence of Self-Realization. And hundreds and hundreds of things that I managed to write down that he had said, fresh just after he'd said them. But in The Path, you know, that I'm the only one, really, who has written for the public to tell people what it was like to live with him. So I feel that I've performed a real service to people. It's hard to imagine what it's like to live with a great master. He was so natural. He had such a wonderful sense of humor. Mm. He was so humble and yet so constantly wise. I have to admit that always in his presence I felt a sense of deep awe. I can't describe. I've never in my life met anyone so great as he, great in humanity, great in wisdom, great in love, in every way that you can imagine.
What was it that made you feel that this was the time to write this book?
Well, I don't know, really. It's been quite a few years. The first version of the book I wrote in 1976.
Wow.
And then I rewrote it with a little bit more maturity of hindsight and so on recently, and this is the new book. That's why I called it The New Path, because the old path was just The Path. Mm. And I don't suppose you need the inspiration to do it. You always know it's to be done. And then I finally thought maybe I can do it now. Mm. I don't think if I were to wait 200 years, I doubt that I would ever be really ready to write such a book. But I know that I won't be around in 200 years. So I thought I'd better seize the moment while I can.
Let me ask you, who was Paramahansa Yogananda? Who was he?
You know, in a way, that's a very interesting question. I remember one time he was working on his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And I was sitting at his feet, and since I had nothing to do, he was just editing it. I was just thinking how fortunate it was to be his disciple, and feeling a great outpouring of love for him. Then when he finished his work, he asked me to help him to his feet, and he stood just a couple of feet in front of me, or 1 foot in front of me, and looked deeply into my eyes. And he said, just the bulge of the ocean. He didn't see himself as a person. He said, often, he said, I killed Yogananda long ago. No one dwells in this temple now but God. And really, he did not have an ego, as you and I do. He was a, in a way you could say he was a principle manifested in human form. Mm. The principle of bliss, the principle of joy. But just the bulge of the ocean. And he wanted us to understand that that is who we are. We are not this ego. This ego is the delusive self. But we are all manifestations of that same one truth. And the beautiful thing is that each one of us is unique. Each one of us, God has a unique song to sing through us. In our normal lives, we try to be unique and fail because all we can do is imitate. But once we find the soul, we find that uniqueness in ourselves that varies from every individual. As Yogananda put it in Autobiography of a Yogi, that every atom is dowered with individuality. It's a fantastic concept.
Mm. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Do you feel that his message, since he came to the United States back in the late 20s, 30s, and through the 40s, and into the early 1950s, do you feel that his message has in some way been lost, that it doesn't have the profundity that it used to, or just the opposite?
It has just the opposite. Everything that he came, he was to prepare people for a future, but it's much stronger now. You know, he said something that very much intrigued me. He said that in a former lifetime, he had been William the Conqueror. And, you know, I was raised in the English system. I was born in Romania, and I'd always been taught that William the Conqueror was one of history's great villains. And here I discovered he was my own guru. Well, that certainly sent me to the history books to do research. And I found that, in fact, William was a very great soul. In fact, you know, 430 years after his body was buried, they discovered his body again, exhumed it, and found that it was incorrupt. That's the sort of thing that only happens to great saints. Mm. But anyway, what I'm saying here is, why did he tell us that? I think he told us that because he wanted us to know that his mission in this life was similar to that of William the Conqueror, that it was not just to a few disciples, it was not just to form an organization, it was to bring about a change in civilization itself. I very deeply believe that his impact is going to be felt more and more over the coming centuries, that it was a universal thing that will change the whole world. That may seem grandiose, but I sincerely believe it.
Do you find that there are those who misunderstand his message, and that they feel or think, or from what they've read, believe that he is trying to bring a form of Hinduism to the West as opposed to something other than what he did bring? And to that end, tell us, was he bringing us a new religion?
No, he said it's a new expression. It's altogether different. You know, let me explain myself a little bit here. Hinduism as such doesn't exist. In India, the name is Sanatana Dharma, which means the eternal religion. And that eternal religion is basically this simple truth. Everything has come from God. Everything must go back to God. The ideas of Krishna and Rama and Saraswati and Vishnu and Shiva, these are all sort of growths that have accrued around the original teaching. But this is the basic teaching of Sanatana Dharma, or the eternal religion. And this is a religion that you have to have if you're going to see God. Christianity is that religion. Buddhism is that religion. And in the most distant galaxy in our universe, it has to be the same religion. So he did not come to teach Hinduism. He came to teach that universal religion, not Christianity, but not churchianity, but Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Churchianity is talking in terms of forms and so on. Jesus Christ taught Sanatana Dharma. He taught Sanatana Dharma. All great souls, as Meister Eckhart, a great Christian saint, said, I move my hand and Christ moves, who is my hand. These truths are universal and they're embedded in every human being. And you can't really call them isms. They aren't religions in those sense. I am not religious myself. I'm spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really believe in the forms of religion because I think they're binding. The goal of religion is to find who we really are, which is manifestations of infinite bliss.
My guest is Swami Kriyananda. He's the author of The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda. Both books side by side, Autobiography and The New Path, I think would be a wonderful addition to your library if you're so inclined. We ask you to stay with us, and Swami, stay with us as well as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be back in just a moment. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is Swami Kriyananda. He's the author of The New Path, and we are so grateful to have him on the program today. For me, it's sort of like old home week. No, I have never met until this past week Swami Kriyananda, but I know of his guru through his guru's book, Autobiography of a Yogi. It has transformed whether people have become devotees of Paramahansa, Swami. The book still has transformed their lives. Not only for, I can share just one specific instance where when I met my present wife, her name is Amrita Ma, she was thinking about taking on this name. And at that time, you know, she said, well, what about you? And I said, well, there's only one name that comes to mind, and it comes from one of the stories from Paramahansa about the Tiger Swami taking on a Bengal tiger whose name was Raja Begum. And I, of course, learned what that meant. And so I took on that nickname for some time of the nickname of Raja. And it kind of fit. I'm not sure that it feels quite the same today, but back then it seemed to fit and it worked very well. So that's an instance for me anyway, where this work and this book, on top of the fact that learning about one of the great Indian scientists of the, I think it was like the teens, 20s or 30s, Jagadish Chandra Bose, and his work, especially with the crescograph and other inventions that he came up with. And there are so many people who don't even know of this gentleman, and yet the work that he did, in my opinion, defined the true nature specifically of plant life, that it is life, and it experiences.
And there have been other books, like The Living Life of Plants.
Yes.
And there are many books coming out. All these truths. You know, the fact is that we're in the new age.
Mm.
That age began in the year 1900. And since then, more and more, I have a niece who told me that everywhere she goes, she hears the word energy.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in an age of energy. And we're going to see this more and more in the future, that matter will cease to, I mean, we now know, science has told us that matter doesn't exist except as a vibration of energy. So more and more, these truths are going to be coming natural to man. He'll understand that everything you do depends on the amount of energy you bring to bear on it.
Yes.
Look at Microsoft. Just the small little thing suddenly became big because of the energy it put in.
Yes.
Because of the energy it took and because of the energy that they were dealing with. Energy is going to be the wave of the future.
And you, even at the age of 85, had an enormous amount of energy to continue.
Well, I managed to write a lot of books and yes. a lot of music. And
and you are going to be teaching a class, a six-week class, beginning February 1st. Tell us a little bit about the coursework and where it will be held.
Well, let me tell you first about my reason for doing it, which is that I believe quite seriously that we're coming to a very great depression. I feel that the old ways of trying to make money and to think in terms of objects and so on has reached a point where it has to be broken. And this is the divine reason, but I think that a very great depression is coming. I mean, to the point where people will be starving and the government won't be able to help them out. I know Yogananda said that the dollar won't be worth the paper it's printed on. And this is one reason I've made this class, or two things I want to especially offer. One is, well, in starting Ananda communities, I've started 8 communities with maybe 1,000 people living in them on several continents. And in these communities, we have two basic principles. One is people are more important than things. So if there's a project that's needed, but there's nobody whom it would help to do that project, we just don't do the project. And the other thing is a Sanskrit saying, yata dharma satajaya, which is where there is right action, there lie victory, success, happiness, everything. So I want to show people that if they will think in their business lives, think in terms of what they can do to serve other people, and not just to get rich themselves. Mm. The usual office atmosphere, I've read books in which they said that sometimes you should slam the door and show your authority and get angry with people, shout at them and so on. I think this is just a sign of a childish immaturity. In fact, if you're kind, if you behave nicely to people, you win them. You don't have to drive them. There's so many principles taught in business that are absolutely wrong. I've written a book called The Art of Supportive Leadership, and this has been used by Kellogg and other big companies. In fact, recently the U.S. Army asked for permission to use this course in training their officers. But it's a very important concept that you've got to remember, first of all, that business, too, is a human activity. And there are two things that everybody in the world wants. One is to avoid pain, and the other is to find happiness. Now, is what they're doing in their business going to make them happy or unhappy? Howard Hughes, who was the most wealthy man in the world at the time, said if a week before he died he wasn't happy. No, you can't find happiness in money. You have to find it in human values. Those businessmen who have thought first in terms of helping people, working with people, they become successful. You know, in India, I was lying in the hospital with double pneumonia, close to death, hardly conscious. And a doctor entered my room, and he said, "Sir, can you help me?" Well, I said, "I'll try." And he said, "Well, I have a son in college in Canada, and I have many financial obligations. I believe in yoga principles and spiritual principles, but how can I follow them completely and yet succeed in business?" And I said, "I have learned in life that by being rigidly true to these principles, I have succeeded. Well, unfortunately, at that time, I was by no means an advertisement for success. I was lying there almost unconscious, and the man left the room quite unbelieving. But I decided I would write a course on this, and it took me a year and a half to do. Well, this course that I'm offering here in 6 weeks, which in the lessons takes 26 weeks, but they'll cover the subjects of right action, how to attract what you need when you need it, inspiration, the importance of right attitude, what is it to be practical, And first things first, these are all principles that I want people to understand, that if you want to be successful, then do those things which lead naturally and by law to perfection. There's always karma, and you can have good money karma and act badly and still be a success. But the truth is that this is the way, finally, to succeed in everything. And the other thing is, remember that you're dealing with people. If you have the support of your staff, they will be much more behind you than if you drive them and they react when you're in the office. But as soon as you turn your back, they slack. Mm. You want them to feel that they're a part of a team. People are more important than things. And I believe in this principle so strictly that, for example, many years ago at Ananda, our first community up near Nevada City, we had a forest fire. And it wiped out 450 of our acres and 21 of our 22 homes in that particular area. And it was discovered that the cause of this was a faulty spark arrestor on a county vehicle. So our neighbors were all excitedly saying that we can sue the county and get all our money back. I wrote to the supervisors. Mind you, we didn't have any insurance, any fire insurance. But I wrote to the supervisors and I said, I will not take out our bad luck on the county, on our neighbors. I said, we'll take our lumps for ourselves and do our best as we can. We succeeded. And our neighbors were still weeping over their loss 10 years later. Mm. So we've found that if you have the right attitude, everything works for you.
You know, you go back to what you said about we're learning that, and we're hearing the word energy all over the place. And I often think about what you've just stated in a way, when we put our focus on those things that we're not real happy about, that we want to resist. In other words, I put it this way. Why don't you go up to that wall, that brick wall, and you push just as hard as you can to knock that wall down? Now, only you can do it. You can't bring any machinery. It's just you, your bare hands. If you can push that wall down, then go ahead and put your energies into it. But 99.9% of the time when we do that, all we do is wear ourselves out. Instead, we should just walk away from the wall and put our energies in those things that we want in our lives, like God and peace and love and relationships that are beneficial to us.
And, you know, another point, very important, is fight the battles you can win.
Right.
That'll give you this. You have to fight the bigger battles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pick your battles,
you
as they say.
Have a terrible fault, work on the smaller ones. In time, you'll find yourself strong enough to face your worst faults. You know, one time I was giving a series of classes, and I had been having I had to get the money to earn the money to build Ananda. I didn't have any wealthy donors, so I had to give classes every week in different cities. It was very tiring. And one time I came home to my parents' house before going out and giving another class, and Mother took one look at me, and she said, you just mustn't punish yourself like this. You're exhausting yourself. And I said, I know, but I have to give the class. She tried to get me to cancel it. I said, there's no way I can cancel it. I don't know where these people live. And so I went and lay down. And instead of sleeping, what I did was review all the things that were causing me exhaustion. And each one, I would feel this wave of resistance trying to push it out of my life. And I said, no, it's a part of your life. You might as well accept it. So all that energy put into pushing on this brick wall came back to me. And I did this with everything that I could think of. When I came out of my so-called nap after half an hour, my mother said, oh, you look so fresh. You've had a good sleep. I hadn't had a good sleep. I'd had a change of attitude.
Well, and I have to say that I've had my own recent personal experience with that, and I'm still in the process of shifting or changing my attitude. But what's fascinating is that I was having some issues with the rest of the world not doing things the way that I think it ought to be done. And so I began to manifest a very simple symptom that a lot of people have in this world, and that's high blood pressure. So I went in and I had all of the tests. Nothing showed up to confirm the cause of the high blood pressure. Yet I know inside myself it's that attitude. It's that energy that's going out in such an aggressive way. You have to do it the right way. The rules state that this is the way it's done. And if you don't do it, then I'm going to get upset. And of course, the old saying is the only one who gets injured when they get upset at the rest of the world is the one getting upset. The rest of the world doesn't care. And so,
well, good for you. Those are one of the most important lessons in life.
Yeah. Well, and it's really funny because I'm being referred to by my physician as the mystery man because he can't find a cause. And it's like, well, the mind and emotions are a sufficient cause in my mind. And I have, again, I've started that process of shifting, of changing my perspective, almost saying even flippantly, I don't care. You want to do that? I don't care. It's none of my business. I need to be about my business. And so we each come to these lessons at different times in our lives. And I still remember a conversation I had with my brother some 17 years ago. We were walking in the desert outside of a building where we were having a family reunion. And I was sharing with him some things. And he says, well, geez, you're 33. It's about time you got it. And what struck me at that moment was, and I shared this with him, I says, you know, it's not when I get it, but that I get it. And it may come at any time in our lives. Yeah. Are you still, even at the ripe young age of 85, are you still having those kinds of, say, aha moments? Or are you so into the, I don't want to say the teachings and training, that's not, the discipline, maybe that's the word I want, or so into God that it doesn't impact you that way? Or are you still having those maybe frustrating human experiences?
I have to say, I don't want to sound boastful, but I have to say that I do seem to have come out of the clouds.
Mm. So it is possible, folks.
I just feel bliss all the time.
Well, can you give us some additional insight into how we might, even if it's just fleeting, even if it's just for a couple of minutes, experience that kind of bliss?
Well, you know, first of all, we have to understand that our own nature is bliss. You know, gold, even though you cover it with mud, is still gold. And so all of us have this nature of bliss. And this is one reason for loving everybody in the world, because everybody is seeking that bliss, even though they don't know it. The worst mafioso is seeking it, but he thinks he'll find it through power and revenge and so on. But everybody has it. So here's what I would say. Try one little experiment. Talk to God, not talk about him. Talk to him. Try to do this for a week. Spend all your time sharing every thought with God, not third person, second person. Share the thought, I'm taking a walk, God, now with you. I'm eating this breakfast now with you. Share that thought with him, and you'll be amazed to see how very soon your consciousness will change.
Mm. Now, we were talking earlier about these classes, the six-week course that you're teaching starting February 1st. Where is this going to be held?
It is going to be held at our ashram in Los Angeles. And again, the best way to get that address is to look up on the Internet, Ananda, A-N-A-N-D-A-L-A for Los Angeles, Ananda, L-A, .org, and they'll tell you all about it.
Matter of fact, I found some interesting additional pieces of information at this website. In addition to being able to purchase a copy of The New Path, you also have on this website an opportunity for people to read the autobiography of a yogi online. And
you know, I also recorded that. The SRS version is my recording, which I like very well, I have to say, because I'm a devotee, whereas that was done by a well-known actor, but it didn't have the same feeling. But yes, you can get the entire autobiography. You can get many of my books online, and we like to share.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what I'm going to share with our listeners right now is that this is called The 6 Weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness. It's an in-person and online course taught by Swami Kriyananda. And it's again going to be at the Ananda Ashram House. And everyone is welcome starting February 1st through March 8th. That's Tuesday evening, 7:30 p.m. And you can certainly get in touch with ananda.org, anandala.org. That's anandala.org, and get all the particulars. I think that's one of the other extraordinary things, too, is the availability of the internet for people to participate if they can't make it to the location. That's a wonderful opportunity. And the internet works just as well as being in person. You'd love to be there in the seat, but at least you still have an opportunity. And again, it's 6 Weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness, February 1st through March 8th. Just go to anandala.org and you can get all of the additional information. Basically, you'll have the opportunity to learn to increase awareness of patterns that keep you from achieving the peace you desire. That's just one of the things that Swami Kriyananda is going to share with us. In the last remaining moments, we have about 5 minutes left in our program. I wanted to basically open up this last few moments to you to share with us from your heart something that comes to mind as it pertains to your guru, Paramahansa Yogananda.
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about his life was that it can inspire a change in me. It wasn't only, I said earlier that I always felt in awe of him. But at the same time, I found that everything that he ever did somehow inspired me. It might have been an expression. It might have been a gesture. But somehow, everything he did inspired me. I would say that if you read Autobiography of a Yogi or if you read The New Path, try to go behind the words. Try to feel the essence. Finally, what you'll find is you're not dealing with a personality. You're dealing with a principle. He was representing that principle. And you'll come to that understanding. I noticed when I was with him that I could never see any ego in his eyes. There was no sense of reaction of liking or disliking anything. It wasn't that it was zombie-like at all, but it was that higher consciousness. And amazing thing about him was I could never remember what he looked like. I had to look at a photograph because he changed constantly in the sense of always reflecting back what the soul consciousness does react to situations. So if you want to really know who he was, meditate. Visualize him at the point between the eyebrows. You can close your eyes and visualize him there and call to him very deeply. And then listen. The point between the eyebrows you might call the broadcasting station of the body. The heart is the receiving station. Listen for his answer there. You will feel a different answer from every saint if you practice what I'm saying. Mm. And you will see that it becomes a very real thing. He can answer your questions. He can be a living presence in your life today. And many people have had this experience. I urge you to try, because this can be a ladder to your own perfection.
You have written over 140 books. This one is your latest. Do you have any that you're working on that may be coming out in the near future? Or is this maybe the last work?
No, I've written a lot of songs. Now I'm going to record some of my very favorite songs.
Oh, love to hear some of those as well.
Peace gave us the mountains. Peace gave us the sky. Nightly when starlight enfolds us, peace is its lullaby. Amen. Amen. And that's the one I wrote on one note. But I've written many with many notes and many melodies.
Well, Swami Kriyananda, I want to thank you once again for sharing this time with us and your story, as well as your experiences with Paramahansa Yogananda. And I look forward one day to meeting you. I beg your pardon?
It's been a joy for me.
Well, thank you so much.
And a joy to meet you, Richard, through this program.
Well, thank you very much. And again, we encourage people to, if you are so inclined, to pick up a copy of The New Path. It is My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, the author, my guest today, Swami Kriyananda. And, of course, he has the six-week course coming up February 1st. Go to anandala.org to get further information. That's anandala.org. And, again, the title of this six-week course is 6 Weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness. It's an in-person and online course taught by my guest, Swami Kriyananda. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on the program, and I encourage you to join us again next Saturday at this time for the program. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until that time next Saturday, and every Saturday, be sure to go to our archive page, the radio show's page at Tell Me Your Story or RichardDugan.com, and you can listen to this and any other programs that you'd like. And we will certainly be here every Saturday, one way or the other. Until next Saturday at this time, love to all.